is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, free of duties and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm and wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety, may all beings be happy. Whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be happy. Let none deceive another, or despise any being in any state. Let none, through anger or ill will, wish harm upon another, even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child. So with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, freed from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness. One should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding. By not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being freed from all sense desires, is not born again into this world.
Right. Thank you, Ajahn. Over to you.
All right. Well, we're here for the meditation night. And last time I remember I tried to make the whole thing a little bit appealing by recognizing the heaviness of thought. When we get stressed out, when we get mad, and when we get crazy in our minds, that is all because of thoughts. So getting an idea how much of a burden these thoughts are, and how freeing it can be just to be able to slow things down for a few minutes. I hoped you might get a glimpse of a little bit of the taste, that there's something beautiful there, and it's not some chore of the meditation to get something, just that awareness in the moment when you manage for things to slow down, There is happiness in that moment already, if we put our attention to it. So today, maybe I want to give another not clue, another something, another carrot on the path, and some people find it scary, and in the first moment they might not like it at all, because we're trained differently. But I think it's an important look onto your mind and onto the meditation. So what we can do tonight for the meditation, we have that aspect of not self in Buddhism. And I try to bring that home a few times already. These people, even when they're meditating, they're criticizing themselves or they're pushing themselves. But having this non-self aspect in mind is much more about that realization that we grew up, especially as Christians, with that idea of free will. And this is such a nonsense concept, free will. If anybody looks at their own mind, we very clearly see that is that concept of free will is they made that up. And why did they have to make it up? It was because it didn't fit with that ideal of an omnipotent God who is all good. And the question arose, where does the suffering come from? Why do people suffer? And that was because of free will. We don't obey the rules of this omnipotent God. And so the free will was the contrast to that ideal of that God. And people just took that on, and even science took that on for a long time. Now there are actually some interesting documentaries out there actually about free will. And people are pressing a button, and it gets measured when there's a different aspect in the brain for the motor function, and where thoughts become conceptualized in the brain. So when people think, I'm pressing that button now, pressing, always free will now, actually the science can tell you up to 3 seconds beforehand actually when you're going to press the button already. But when it comes into the mind as your conscious action of pressing the button, it's long decided already. So, and some people find that very scary, puppets on strings or whatnot. There's no free will there. And that would be obviously one extreme. But as meditators, watching what is going on when we give the mind this clear instruction of slowing down for the meditation, we see what we consider to be free will doesn't exist. We cannot tell the mind, okay, I'm going to meditate for half an hour. No, mind, you just be quiet for half an hour. If it was my mind, it would be quiet for half an hour. It's not happening. So who is thinking? And so we find out that thinking is a process in itself, and this process has its own conditions in itself, dependent on our nationality, on our upbringing, on our social economic background, on all these different factors. If we had good parents, bad parents, nice siblings, bad siblings. All these different inputs, reactions, make us that consciousness that we experience now. And so getting an insight into that can take a lot of that blame away. I'm not doing things right. Or even others don't do things right because they're in the same boat as we are, basically. Is this process going on? And today, if you get bored in your meditation, just remember the instruction that was actually that we try to silence the mind for half an hour and see the thoughts coming up, and see what flavor these thoughts have. This are they interesting? Are they nice thoughts? Are they critical thoughts? And not putting another one in the background who is judging that process, and just a little bit of kindness in the background of allowing things to happen. From time to time, if it's getting too crowded in the mind again, we can repeat that instruction, that for an hour, for that half an hour, that we don't have to think. But if we pull and push too much, then we miss the point again. Then we think we are this pusher and puller again. But in for that meditation, I want people to become more aware that these thoughts come into the mind, and then either the mind clings onto something and follows it, or if it doesn't do that and remembers that now is not the time for that, then they just vanish by themselves as well, and then something new comes up. And seeing that process can give a very beautiful insight in not blaming yourself for your thoughts, and also figuring out a little bit how thoughts, if they are unskillful, get us into a lot of trouble. Because if it's self or not, the consequences are still there of these thoughts. But we can take the blame away from that process. So we try the same in the meditation like we usually do, but with a little bit more focus on that we want the mind to calm down. Thoughts are not important in that meditation. And then see what's coming up with all these thoughts. And then see what it does in your mind. Can you handle that perspective? That's basically you have instructed the mind not to think, and but the thought process is continuing. So I hope you bring enough kindness with you in that meditation, not to get up another struggle, and just watch what is happening. Maybe from time to time, if you think too much, repeat the instruction inside your own head. Just it's not necessary to think now anything. Keep it kind. Not try to cut anything off. But also keep that watchful eye when the mind just tries to cling on to something and makes it incredibly important in that moment now, and that you really have to figure that out. That is just I hope you all have the time now. You know it's Tuesday evening and you don't have anything to do. Your cooking plates are off and the I don't know, the telephone is muted or switched off. Your surroundings are as good as they get. You are in your favorite chair. You can sit comfortably, as good as you can. And then anything that arises that has to do with the future or the past is basically a distraction. It's just another one of these habits coming up, this constant inner monologue, actually, which can drive us crazy. So that is going to be the emphasis tonight, and maybe afterwards you can give me some comments if anything happened for you because of that. Oh, this was just normal meditation as always. So please make yourself comfortable. The first thing that we do is we go into the body. We check that the body is comfortable, because the body and the mind are very closely connected. When the body is uncomfortable, the mind has a lot of trouble to relax. So please go once through your body, make sure everything is as relaxed and comfortable as you can have it. And make sure that your breathing is unrestricted. That your breath can go in all the way, you can pump yourself up and figure out actually if there's anything there that is still in the way. Going a little bit into the body, into the breath, feeling the breath coming in and going out. Maybe there's still a few minutes of adjustments. Shoulders are more relaxing. The neck goes into the right position. So having that as comfortable as possible. Giving the mind a chance to relax. And there's also some kindness involved with that. You don't want to harm, don't want to achieve. You want the body to be safe, as good as it can be. We don't want to harm the mind. We just are interested, what is going on? What thoughts are coming up? Is there anything important still? And can it not wait for half an hour? We're just resting in the moment. Nothing to figure out. Nothing to decide. Nothing to judge. So there could just be complete silence for the duration of the meditation. So who's still struggling there in the background, thinking? Let the perceptions flow freely from lights behind your eyes, sounds in your room, feelings in the body. And the breath is just our anchor. It's the point where we can go to and stick to. It's just too confusing. It's always there for us. It doesn't matter if we control the breath a bit, but we don't have to. If we control it or not, it's gonna go in and out. Nothing matters for this 25 minutes. No thoughts are valuable or important. No insight is gonna be gained through thinking. Just enjoy the silence of the mind. bright and awake enough to see the salts when they're flushing. And aware enough to let them go, you know, not to cling to anything. Holiday from thoughts, from meditation. only a few minutes left. Where are you in your mind? Lots of thoughts. Quiet. I still have 2 minutes. 2 minutes to be quiet in the mind. I'm going to ring the bell 3 times and we end the meditation for tonight. So, welcome back. I don't know.
Okay, Ashan, do you want to take questions or do you want to give us a talk first?
Are there questions that came up with the meditation?
So, any questions specific to the meditation, and leave any other questions till the end? That would be lovely. Nobody's asking questions, so maybe we could go to a talk and see what happens at the end.
All right.
Thank you.
Well, the intention is obviously, at least my interest is always, I like to understand things. I think it's the lack of understanding of our own minds that gets us into trouble. So you always have to judge for yourself if that is helpful for you or not in the particular circumstance, because you have a different character, you have different problems, you might have a different way of dealing with your own mind. And I can do things like that, questioning thoughts, because I have enough trust and kindness for myself that I can play around like that. It's not scary for me or anything. You know, that doesn't bring up the question, oh, where is myself? Then actually, if nobody is handling the steering wheel. But if that is uncomfortable for you, you have to decide yourself actually to go back to something different, to metta. I just find it fascinating that concept that we have in our head the whole time. Of we're the guys in control. Huh? We're the our success is our success, and our failures are our failures. Huh? But watching this process going on in the mind, and it's the same with feelings, it's the same with perception, with anything else. It's basically just stuff coming in and going again the whole time. And somewhere in that process, we decided actually, oh yeah, that's me. Oh, that's me. I wasn't the one who said at the beginning of the meditation actually to shut up for half an hour. That was somebody else. And this, if we watch that process, we see this. What we put, I mean, it's such a big deal these days, you know, all the future is in your own hands, you just have to put the effort in and you can be anything you want. It's such a nonsense, basically, you know. It's just like they have never looked at their own minds, and it's just, how can they sell you shit like that? You know, it's absolutely, absolutely fascinating. It's like telling a blind man you can see anything you want. People make such a big deal of this. I mean, we love sports, sports, and just put the effort in, and then you can have the medal. And isn't that the proof that when you put your will behind it, then you the results is gonna come. But I mean, to have a character like that, you have to grow up in a certain way. You have to have certain interests and whatnot. Huh? If you just to have this competitiveness, just to have this wanting something so much, maybe even getting the joy of competing. That drives a lot of people, and if that is not there for you, then obviously that doesn't work. So it's not a free will that I become this, I become that, or whatnot. We are character based, limited in the way we can proceed in our lives. We're the same as the small people cannot be good basketball players, is that if I have certain difficulties and hindrances in my mind, I cannot proceed on the path in the same way as other people. So the first step is a very honest examination of what is going on in our own mind. Yeah? Not trying to be better, not trying to be worse and humble or whatnot, just this understanding of what is really going on there in that mind. Yeah? And I find that so beautiful, taking this this pressure away of somebody in the background who is at fault, can bring up a lot of compassion, that contemplation, and just seeing conditions, causes and conditions just unfolding or reacting and manipulating themselves and others. And this just takes this weight away. It takes the weight away in the meditation as well. You know, being a good meditator or a bad meditator. It's just, what is that even supposed to mean? The only thing that can help always and has helped humanity always was understanding. Huh? Understanding the nature of physics, biology, chemistry, got us all the advances that we have today, that we can sit in front of this magic screen and talk to each other. Actually, you see my picture, which is just, how does that work? You know, it's just like so much progress in figuring things out, measuring things, and understanding how these physical processes work, and that leads to certain results. And the same is with the mind. The mind is not an arbitrary thing, a miracle or God-given or whatnot. The mind is a conditioned thing. And nobody can tell you different, because if you watch it, you see that it's... I have some thoughts in German still. I still speak with a German accent. English is my second language. So there's a conditioned thing there. I read some of the Dhamma in German, which gives me a different insight in some of the words that people can only read in English. So I never put in any effort into reading it in Pali, in the original as well. But that is all condition that comes from my background. The way I'm treating myself is because I had nice parents, basically, and they didn't push me too hard. And if you had crappy parents, you might deal with you differently in your own mind. You might have a lack of confidence or self-esteem or a lot of resentment and whatnot. And if most of us maybe are somewhere in the middle with parents who did some shitty stuff and did a lot of nice stuff as well. That is all conditioned. Seeing this processes and seeing the input that thoughts can have on this stuff that becomes powerful, because a thought, I don't wanna think for half an hour in the beginning of our meditation. It's just one weak little input in that stream that goes on and on and on the whole time. It's just one little comment, basically, in the background. While if there are thoughts that are attached to something strong, these tendencies I talked a lot about before, tender and leaning towards these raw strings, where all our desires lie. Oops, I don't know what that was. There's some feedback coming here, I don't know what that is. That has a completely different input. Just for example, a smoker. A smoker who says, okay, I give up smoking. If you have never smoked before, obviously not a problem. You don't even have anything to give up. It's just another thought in your mind. If you are a smoker and have the tendencies of a smoker, you immediately feel the pull and you start sweating already just by the thought of giving up smoking. And that's why drugs are so powerful as well. It's not just the chemical processes when people get addicted. It's the the mind, the pleasure that the mind got out of that stuff. And this, I mean, people can be clean for years with the heavy drugs. And then just this memory comes up over a particular moment where they felt that particular feeling in the beginning. And then that tendency gets back into memory, and then boom, they're back. And it's just like as if they had never stopped. And that is what this tendency is on. That is where Buddhism works with these thoughts and these tendencies. The thoughts influence the tendencies. If I don't see the danger in something, then I can say, oh, that is the most beautiful feeling in the world. Shooting heroin, oh, that's so beautiful. That's the best I ever felt in my life. If you don't see at the same time, you just get addicted to a substance that you don't even know what you're injecting into your veins, if you're crazy enough to do that. And you just watch that that what's happening in the moment without any reference, of not seeing actually the addiction, not seeing other junkies actually what happened to them, then you can get addicted. So the seeing a clear path of the what it promises, how it feels, but also where it leads to. And that happens in the mind all the time. Right? And that's where we can go wrong. Because anger can feel good. Right? If we get angry, can feel very liberating. So then we develop the tendencies, we got the mindset, oh, that was right, that feels good. So we develop the tendency of anger, we get our way, people leave us alone. And we don't see the negative consequences, the tensing up, the world getting smaller, the walls building up around us. People try to avoid us, and the worse it gets. So there's different sides to all of these things. Seeing the consequences in the mind of thoughts. When the mind gets very still, you can see how powerful some thoughts are. How much drag they have. How the rubber string just pulls the minds back to it, because you all heard of the five hindrances by now, if you're with the group for a few years. And the strongest pullers in this one, what keeps the meditation from going deeper, is wanting and not wanting. It's always this wanting and not wanting. And to have somebody in the background just watching, not interfering with the process of the meditation, is just incredibly difficult. But that is not because of a lack of commitment or a lack of will or skill or anything. It's because of all these tendencies that we have. This constant wanting and not wanting. Wanting to see, wanting to hear, wanting to taste, wanting to touch. Wanting to feel good feelings, wanting to avoid bad feelings. Wanting to have nice thoughts, wanting to avoid bad thoughts. And that is seeing that as a process can be so liberating. Because we can see the danger, but we don't need the blame. Can see, oh yeah, that is anger. Sometimes that helps, but sometimes if I cultivate that, it becomes unpleasant. The whole structure of anger is, if you feel anger in the body, is constricted. It's hard to breathe with. And if you enjoy letting go in meditation, the mind doesn't like anger so much anymore. Sees it as something unpleasant. So that's, it's such a natural thing that if one watches what's going on and sees what's causing more suffering and more happiness, the result is by itself. There's nobody needed in the background deciding anything, because the mind wants happiness and tries to avoid unhappiness. Seeing the consequences of certain train of thoughts, seeing the danger in that, if the mind sees it, the thoughts are going to stop, I guarantee you. Not just somebody wanting to be a good Buddhist. I mean, when the mind realizes this is harmful, this is painful, it's okay. Nobody needs it. It's going to drop it. And that is where your wisdom can arise. And where you don't need anybody telling you in the background what is this and what is that. You see that for yourself, how the mind works. You see there is no free will. You never had free will in the beginning. There's nobody there to blame. It's only unfortunate thoughts and unfortunate actions that cause yourself and other people either more suffering or less suffering, depending on how clearly the mind sees what is leading to more suffering and less suffering. Yeah. No free will obviously doesn't mean that there are no consequences. We still experience consequences. We still experience ourselves as a self. This is my body. These are my thoughts. But watching that from time to time can get us on this a little bit higher on that hill again. Just seeing a process. And then we can take some of the guilt away, we can take some of the achievements away, People praise you, or, oh, Bhante, it was so beautiful. It's just like, yeah, tomorrow you're going to hate me. Just doesn't matter so much anymore, It's just, it wasn't me in the first place. Didn't decide to do it a certain way, or didn't contemplate for hours what I'm going to talk about. It's just what comes out at the moment, and that is dependent on what was going on in the day and in the week and through the years. So it's this cause and effect thing, and if you can put a little bit of your attention onto just watching this cause and effect and this beautiful non-judgment in the background, and just understanding a little bit, or having a little bit of faith to watch in that direction, just to see what happens if I just stand back and watch what is coming, not judging so much. Gives a beautiful sense of freedom in the meditation from time to time. And there are so many things and methods you can do if you play around a little bit in your own mind. There is no, I have to do this, and I have to keep my breath, and I have to do my mantra, and I have to do my counting or whatnot. There's always trying to lead to a certain point somewhere in the future where it's going to be so peaceful and you're going to be awakened. missing what is going on there, what the Buddha was pointing to, understanding what is going on more and more and more. And the understanding leads to peace already, because it becomes more beautiful. And the mind understands how painful thought is the whole time. It craves a little bit to that. It craves, but actually it's some sort of a wholesome craving. It's an interest. It's an interest in peace. It's just like something is interesting, like your chemistry kit or a fascinating documentary or whatnot. You're just glued there and you don't want to miss anything. And if that is happening in the meditation, there's no problem there anymore already. If there's that kind of interest there, the meditation is running. And if there are still thoughts coming, doesn't matter. Those thoughts are just coming up and going, but the that things that is incredibly important now, it hangs into that, this train of thoughts, just dropping quicker and quicker. And it's just like getting, wow, it's getting stiller and stiller, and nothing to do and nothing to achieve, and it just feels freer. There's a feeling to that already, and the mind recognizes it. But you always have to see where you are yourself. So you might have to put some effort into, I encourage you always put some effort into your sila, in your five precepts. And the non-killing thing, try to avoid killing insects as well for a while. Try to be kind to creatures. If you have an insect in your house, take it out. Having that goodwill towards living beings is a beautiful accelerant for a non-fearful mind. Being trustworthy. And obviously trying to keep your mind as clear as possible. But that comes by itself. If the mind enjoys clarity, certain drugs will become very unpleasant. There's not a lot of interest in that after a while. There's only the joy of the clarity is its own tendency already that pushes against that. But the five precepts are this very important safety net. If you experience fear in your meditation still, put effort into that. Effort into kindness to creatures. And not artificial, and I have to be the nice guy all the time. Just making an effort, and not just mosquito power. It's just like, yeah, maybe even get a sting, let it finish sucking your blood, and then it's gonna take off and it's not gonna bother you again. It's a pregnant woman, it wants to feed the eggs. It's not just there for a snack, actually. Yeah? That's a one-time happening. If you let it finish, it sucks most of its blood dilutant out again, and then it doesn't even eat so much anymore. And that is a state of mind, that harmlessness, that loving kindness that we're chanting. And if you experience insecurity in your meditation, please put effort into that first. If you do that for a while, it's gonna get better with the fear. And experiment a little bit. What is working for you? If you don't have such a scientific mind, and you have a devotional mind, light your candles and do your bowing, do your chanting, do whatever puts you in a wholesome mind state. What you associate with kindness and with something that reminds you going in a certain direction. Because we need this reminders. The world doesn't remind us. The world reminds us of achieving and distraction and busy and cell phone, and that is still so important, and that is still so important, actually. And you will put that thing away, and then what's next? So that is the next addiction. Some people, they cannot go into certain areas anymore where there's no cell reception or they are the new heroin addicts, actually. And if people don't see the suffering in that, I don't envy you. I don't envy you if you can't see the suffering in that. It's just another dependence. And if there is no inner peace afterwards, when that thing is put down, you can just sit there and be with yourself, and that is good enough. That I call suffering. That I find really sad. And I hope you you're learning to get to that point where you're with yourself and just enjoy being with yourself a bit. Don't have to be all the time, but these few minutes for yourself, and then you enjoy it, not having to do anything. And that is your meditation, and you watch what is going on. Okay. Are there questions? You look all very funny.
And Ajahn, there's a question in the chat box. Can you see the chat? Do you want me to?
No, I see it. Chat. Well, first of all, is there questions from the live viewers here? Anything unclear? I mean, from the pictures that I see.
I just put the mark up, but it has been deleted. So can I ask you a question?
Yeah, please.
Okay, first I would like to know, being also a German person living in England, I have exactly the same problems with the language as you have. I emphasize with you on that. But my question would be, how did you come to Buddhism in Germany? Because I think I'm not sure in from what area you are coming from, but speaking for myself, I'm in South Germany, very traditional, very old-fashioned. 35 years back, if you would say you would be Buddhist, you would have been in a sect or something very.
But that was in most other countries as well. Actually, it's just it's because of the Dalai Lama, basically, that has brought a lot more acceptance to Buddhism, I think, in the last 20, 30 years, actually, yeah. Now, for me, it was because of my brother. He went to Thailand and became a monk already when I was 19, and I went over there for his ordination. That's how I got into contact with Buddhism. But there are Buddhist monasteries in Germany now as well, and meditation gatherings and whatnot. So my brother has a monastery in Germany, actually, in Frankenwald.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you very much. And also I wanted to say your meditation was very good for myself. I was very peaceful, and I think this is our problem, to get rid of our conditioning. I struggle so much with that, in a lot of things, you know, we always being perfect, always doing this, always, how do you say it, to get
and achieving the next thing, and that is what people use meditation for then, you know, just now I'm a meditator and now I have to achieve peace or whatnot, you know, it's just another weight on the shoulders again, you know, and it should be exactly the opposite. Should be the holiday time, should be the time where we learn about what is going on in our minds. And by that learning and understanding, getting the peace and getting also lots of happiness out of it, because through understanding comes happiness. We see what's not so perfect in the mind and what leads to more suffering and what leads to more happiness. And that is the path. Okay. Thank you
very much.
I show him the question in the chat box.
Yeah, okay. Good evening, Marlene.
No, not that one, the next one from Anon. Hi, Anshan.
I could only see the process of arising and dissolution clearly during very good meditation. Oh, excellent. But other time it is just a theory that I have. I cannot hold the perception of it in normal times. Is there any technique that can help you see the process outside meditation, other than just theory and mind ourselves? Yes. No, there isn't. even in the monastery here, you get caught up in the busyness of the day and in the interactions with people and in the likes and dislikes. You might have a little bit of energy left and a little bit more time here that you can draw yourself and remind yourself actually what is going on. But the meditation is there to go a little bit, walk a little bit up the hill and see over the weeds, and then we can go back down. But the more often we have a look, it's beautiful out there. There's fresh air up there. And that is the mind remembers that, and then the mind also wants to go back there. Then it's not that we have to meditate and I should meditate and whatnot. It's basically this, I need some peace now. Actually, I need a bit of time for myself, and we enjoy that. And then it becomes something very, very natural. But during the daytime, in a busy day, you might be able to, when you get angry or when you get into an unwholesome state, to hold yourself back a little bit, right? Because you realize more and more that is an unwholesome direction for your mind, and it's unpleasant there. But with the smaller things, obviously, not possible at all. I completely have that sense of self and no separation between my thoughts and the watcher or anything. Now when I talk to you as well, it's not possible. I don't see it.
There's a question from Sangeetha which relates directly to what you were saying in your talk, Ashan.
To be competitive and achieve. Okay. Dear Ashan, I have a question in regard to what you said about wanting and to be competitive and achieve things. I have been practicing martial arts for the last year and a half. I have achieved 2 levels in that time period. I'm constantly wanting to reach the next level and so on and so forth. I have also picked up playing tennis in the last year and want to get better at it and take every opportunity to play, and just in the last couple of days I realized that I have trouble concentrating on anything due to always having disturbing thoughts in my mind. So I picked up juggling as a hobby and started to practice that. So I'm always wanting to achieve this. So yeah, that's right. And I'm actually putting effort. Are you saying that it's not good for me? This wanting to achieve is bad. Do I need to slow down? Am I doing all this just to keep me entertained? I'm not sure. Can you help advise? Thank you. All right. Well, that's the thing with the different characters, isn't it? I never was that interested into this achieving things. If you get your kick out of that, fair enough. But if it stresses you out already, contemplate that as well. How much joy you get out of it, how much suffering you get out of it, how much your effort is worse, how much your medal or your brown belt and black belt and I don't know what belts you have there in your martial arts. In the end, it's just holding up your trousers, isn't it? sure, you're the master and whatnot. I don't know what pushes you. You have to know your own mind. I mean, monks can go off on being the Ajahn as well, basically. Oh, Ajahn, and beautiful Ajahn, and thank you Ajahn and whatnot. As some people, they get really off on that stuff, and then they say because they have a robe on, they're becoming something special. I don't think I have that problem so much. I don't. I find it burdensome to stick out. I have to admit, when I'm walking in a crowd, and you walk in a robe, and it's basically you're an outsider. Would love to put a hat on and a normal coat on and blend into the crowd. But that's my character. You have to know your own character. You have to know what causes your own character stress. Maybe you can go towards the meditation with the martial arts sword and just like every sword that comes, you cut its head off left and right if you're playful enough or whatnot. But if it's not leading to any peace, and if you're just getting more fed up with anything, with everything, and it's obviously it is not working for you as well. So I don't say don't play tennis, and I don't say don't do your martial arts or try to achieve anything, not at all. But if just weigh it very carefully and see what you get out of it. And if it's in the end, it becomes something just to achieve something where you don't even have the benefit of it anymore, that feeling of something good happened to you, then you can drop it. But yeah, go for your sports. But it's also beautiful to have a refuge in the mind, to coming back to something where you can just sit down and you can feel good with yourself. And maybe you find that in meditation or maybe not. So there's no good and bad there for me so much. We're all different. And if you have to do that stuff and you enjoy it, do it. Don't let the stupid Buddhists tell you otherwise.
Ajahn, do you want to spend the last minute answering a question on enlightenment, or do we pass on that for next week? Could you please talk, where does enlightenment come from?
Well, enlightenment is, I do a very quick one because it's time already. Enlightenment is first a wrong translation, it's awakening. And what do we awaken from is a question. So it's basically that the Buddha said is that we're now asleep, and that awakening, exactly the thing, seeing things clearly, like we chant at the end of the Metta Sutta as well, the clarity of vision, being freed from all sense desires, that is when awakening happens. This clarity of vision, the seeing the whole thing as a process, and that's realizing what we had today, the non-self business in Buddhism, realizing fully the dukkha, the suffering business in Buddhism, are the two major points where people cut through it. If the mind knows exactly what suffering is and sees it in all of its possibilities, that's where the awakening happens, when people wake up. And that is, so it's a process of understanding, but not an intellectual understanding. It's a process of seeing things clearly. That is what awakening is. But I'm not awakened, so I can just give you my interpretation of it. And as always, words are just pointing towards something. But it's a process of letting go, of freeing the mind of more and more burden, getting lighter and lighter. The relinquishment and the suffering falling away. And that should happen on the way. If that is not happening on the way, then there is something going wrong on the path. That is important to remember. So if you become a Buddhist and you become more miserable than wherever before, something is wrong there. Actually, there's some wrong understanding there. So be careful with that. And just be believing something because it's said by somebody in robes, or you read something in a book. Awakening is the ending of suffering.